Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
We were just about to sit down to dinner and we saw a lights flashing. And so we went to look to see what it was, thinking, you know, maybe a neighbor had been hurt or something. And as I got close to the door, I heard them yelling, you know, "Come out, Shirley." And I'm like, "Oh, boy.
Shirley, come on out, Shirley. We would like a redress of grievances with you and your illegal actions."
I was scared. I went back in and we have glass doors. It's beveled. You can't see through it, but you can see shadows and stuff.
"We demand tomorrow at the school board meeting that you repeal all mask mandates that you have put into place."
So, I went on the other side, you know, the house, hid behind the refrigerator.
"We know your agenda. We know that you are funneling past through your campaigns. There is a reason why you are called Dirty Shirley. Beware of Dirty Shirley."
You know, I called 911 and I was on the phone with her until the officer arrived. And I said, you know, "Don't have him come to the front door. I don't want to open the front door." So he came around the back.
"We know the next step is from mask to vaccine, and this will not happen. This is the line we will die on."
"That's right. No to vaccine. No to masks."
When I went to sit down to have my dinner after everybody left, big tall glass of water, put it down and it fell and splashed all over my husband and all over the chairs. And then we had to clean that up. So yeah, I was nervous. In fact, I was quite nervous. Even the next day, I noticed I was still a little shaky.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And this is Shirley Brown.
I'm chair of the Sarasota County, Florida School Board.
On Monday, October 4th, approximately a dozen protesters, including four children, gathered outside Brown's home. They accused her of corruption. They demanded an end to Sarasota School's mask mandate. A woman held a sign that said, "Masking is child abuse." Another man, dressed in black, paraded the yellow "Don't Tread on Me" Gadsden flag in one hand and waved a "Don't Get Muzzled" sign in the other. He wore sunglasses and a black cloth mask across his face. Brown has served on the school board for 16 years. Before that, 8 years in the Florida State Legislature. So she knows local school politics can be a rough and tumble affair.
But by and large, you know, we were running our schools the way we wanted, you know, and things were going forward. But more recently, the state has been getting more and more involved in our curriculum. And then now, you know, there's this nationwide effort to kind of take over school boards, and not for any real reason, except, you know, they're saying we're bringing these liberal ideas to our kids.
Recently, the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir just released a chilling song that they are coming for your children and that the gay agenda is here. I think parents should be concerned about their children's safety because it appears that Brown, Edwards, and Goodwin are not. Or maybe they just have...
Recently, public comment periods at Sarasota school board meetings have also drawn parents concerned about critical race theory.
Liberals take obscure political theories from many universities, trying to make it mainstream, dividing our children by their color of the skin. Many parents in this room tonight will agree that we will not and never share our children with government.
And of course, there is also the pandemic. Brown says COVID cases in Florida spiked right as students returned to school late this summer.
We never had as high numbers like this in our state, except this Delta virus, and it was spreading so fast.
So on August 20th, the Sarasota School Board held an emergency meeting.
"The school board strongly encourages students to, 1, wear mask coverings over their nose and mouth at all times while indoors. 2, become vaccinated. 3, obtain a booster shot if or when one becomes available. And 4, quarantine when COVID-19 symptoms appear."
Dozens of parents showed up to speak.
"Any noise from the audience will not be accepted. And those people will be removed."
I,
when there was somebody that was speaking in favor of the mask mandates and saying we need to keep our kids safe, those people get jeered while they're talking or when they're walking back to their seats.
Many people that I know who also support this option did not want to come today because they were afraid for their safety due to the aggression and disrespect they experienced on Tuesday, and I don't blame them.
I am a healthcare provider, and I am a mom of a fourth grader. While sitting here in the room with all of you today, I learned that 12 of her class of 22 were sent home for quarantine.
Those who are not educated will always benefit from the educated. Just like I have a responsibility to keep others safe, you have an even greater responsibility because you have to keep our children safe.
Point of privilege, Mrs. Brown.
And while many parents spoke in favor of the proposed mask mandate, more spoke against it.
I'm telling you right here now, no matter what you decide, my children are not wearing masks to school anymore.
Respect the parents. That's what your job is, to respect the parents.
My daughter will not wear a mask. I know I was masked for 2 weeks, and I had a saliva gland infection that was going to my brain because of the mask.
Is history repeating itself, I ask you? Do you remember Adolf Hitler's regime? Are you ready to give up all of our freedoms?
I'm just letting you know that this whole mask mandate, we will not comply, and we will not give in to this medical tyranny, because that's all this is. This is medical tyranny, and if y'all don't wake up, we're going to lose our country.
More than 4 hours passed. The Sarasota School Board tried to move toward a vote.
Well over 60% of the people in this community who are for mandatory masks.
That is a lie.
If another outburst from you, you will be removed, Mr. Wilson.
No, I'd like to have him removed now. This was not, he's already been warned. I warned them at the beginning that I would not.
No.
Excuse me, clear the gallery.
The board recessed, then tried again.
Excuse me, ma'am. You are not recognized. Ma'am,
please remove
you are
her
not
from
recognized. You will need to leave.
Please remove her from the gallery.
Ms. Sherman,
she will not pay attention to me. She is not recognized. You need to leave. All right, school board members, continue your conversation. Thank you.
Frustration filled the room, including from board chair Shirley Brown.
My administration doesn't want to accept a compromise. Members of the public don't want to accept a compromise. I have to do what I have to do for the children of this community.
Finally, after more than 5 hours, the Sarasota School Board voted 3-2 to adopt a 90-day mask mandate.
We are adjourned.
The August 20th Sarasota School Board meeting was passionate and contentious, but it was also legal, nonviolent, and no arrests were made. Shirley Brown says it was soon after the vote that the emails started coming in.
You know, for one instance, I'm not even sure if he's a parent of anyone in our district because they're coming from all over the country. As a parent, I think you need to be taught a lesson. Shut your effing mouth. Parents are going to kick down the door and drag you out by your hair.
Then her phone number and her home address were posted online. And earlier this month, protesters showed up on the street right outside her house.
The man with the bullhorn had a Proud Boys t-shirt on. And Southwest Florida, for some reason, you know, had some of the highest numbers of protesters on January 6th. And we know that people have broken into other board meetings.
Sarasota County Sheriff's deputies did come to Brown's home. The department tweeted later that no violations were seen and no arrests were made. Brown's case isn't isolated. On September 29th, the National School Board Association, which represents more than 90,000 school board members across the country, took an unprecedented step of sending a letter to President Biden. stating that there have been threats or disturbances at school board meetings in at least a dozen states. The association also requested federal investigations of such incidents and protection for school board members. Quote, as these acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials have increased, the letter said, the classification of these heinous actions could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. On October 4th, Attorney General Merrick Garland responded. The Justice Department will announce a series of new measures, Garland said in a memo, promising that the federal government will address criminal conduct directed at school personnel. Specifically, that threats of violence can be reported to the FBI and that the DOJ will create a special task force. Quote, while spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, Garland wrote, that protection does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. That drew immediate condemnation from some legal experts. Maude Marin is a criminal defense attorney, former New York City school board member, and self-identified lifelong liberal.
There is absolutely no jurisdiction whatsoever for the FBI to look into me or any parent showing up at a school board and saying meekly and timidly that you disagree with something, or saying loudly, rashly, with giant signs and yelling voices and rude language. I go for the former, but you have a legal right to go for the latter.
And so, just like that, America's culture wars and angry politics came full circle yet again. Everything national is local now, and the local can soon become national. Because as soon as Garland wrote his memo, Republicans responded.
Things are just getting really crazy when they're using it against parents of children who, what? They line up at a school board meeting. They want to express their concerns. They elect these people, by the way. The parents elect the school board, and right. Now they can't even speak exactly. Without being investigated. It's insane. Anytime.
Missouri Senator Josh Hawley on Fox News October 5th. But who exactly is being silenced? Back in Sarasota, school board chair Shirley Brown believes there is a silent majority out there, and she hopes they speak up.
What I want to share is I think that the parents who are happy with their children's education need to speak up, and they need to make sure when they're going to vote that they know that their school board members and even their state legislators support public schools, because public schools are under attack.
We'll have more on what's happening at America's school boards when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Right now, school boards are some of the most contentious political spaces in America. And today, we're trying to understand why. Here's another example. This is Paul Willestein. He's a journalist in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. He covers the Northampton School Board there. And he says the last three meetings have had additional security measures in place, police and metal detectors, to keep the meeting safe.
There was a fellow who is running. He made national news. He's running for Northampton County Executive, Steve Lynch, and he made a speech in Harrisburg a number of weeks ago saying that he was going to come with, 40 or so strong men, something like that, and remove everybody from the school board. The school board also had to deal recently with parents protesting books that were donated to the school district that had to do with kind of, I don't want to say controversial topics, the parents said they were controversial, regarding the topics of Black Lives Matter.
So that's from Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. Well, joining us now is Peter Montgomery. He's a senior fellow at Right Wing Watch, a project of the progressive group People for the American Way. He's also studied the religious right movement and right-wing political groups for more than two decades. And he joins us from Washington. Peter Montgomery, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Magda.
You know, ever since the formation of school boards in America, they have been places of passionate debate from everything over race, desegregation of schools, how schools teach math, religious debates in schools. More recently, many parents flooding school board meetings, complaining passionately about the Common Core. So what's different about what we're seeing now?
Well, in some ways, it is a continuation of that trend that you talk about for public schools to become culture war battlegrounds and political battlegrounds. I think one thing that's different right now is that there's a coming together of sort of COVID conspiracies and people who view masks and vaccine requirements as a form of tyranny, and that's coming together with this a manufactured right-wing campaign against critical race theory, and then pre-existing concerns and concerns that are being inflamed about the teaching of racism in schools, but also the inclusion of LGBTQ students. So there's a number of issues that are all being used by right-wing groups to stir up people to show up at school board meetings, to run for school board, and to try to take them over.
So we're going to talk about sort of the deeper level of organization in a few minutes, Peter, because I know you've done quite a bit of research on that. But it seems as if to me there's really two issues at play with some overlap. And the first one is that there actually are a lot of issues that parents care about right now, COVID being primary amongst them, as you talked about, and the response within schools to COVID, and then other sort of more cultural and social issues. But showing up at school board meetings and even being rowdy and yelling and disruptive, I mean, none of that, it's distasteful and just, you know, it can interrupt meetings, but none of that is really illegal. So I wonder what you make of the National School Board Association's letter that they wrote on September 29th to the Biden administration, really requesting that the Department of Justice maybe even look to the Patriot Act and consider some of these acts as potentially domestic terrorism. Is that an overstep here of what we're seeing?
I think it's really important to distinguish between what the School Board Association asked for and the Department of Justice has done, and what Republicans and right-wing groups are mischaracterizing it. You know, nobody is trying to treat concerned parents as domestic terrorists just for showing up, something that the Heritage Foundation claimed in an email just this morning. The complaint was about, the concern that was raised was about the increasing level of harassment and threats of violence directed at school board members and educators. And as your opening segment noted, that the Justice Department made it clear that they support the right for spirited debate. And this is not an effort to silence people who want to show up and yell at their school board members. It's an effort to deal seriously with criminal acts like harassment and threats of violence and actual acts of violence.
Mm. Now, I should note that we did ask, we requested the National School Board Association if they could join us, and they declined. But here's a little bit more from that September 29th letter, where they listed a couple dozen of what they call acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials, saying that they have increased and that the classification of the actions could be equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism. And therefore, they requested the federal government review and examine appropriate enforceable actions against these, quote, crimes and act of violence under the Gun-Free School Zones Act, the Patriot Act in regards to domestic terrorism, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, and others. Now, I do want to give voice to, you know, people who are pushing back against that. Here's Maud Maron. You heard from her a little bit earlier, former school board member and now an independent candidate for New York City Council. She's also a criminal defense attorney, and she says there's hypocrisy right now in the concern over protests at school board meetings.
Let me just point out that in New York City, the teachers union showed up outside of Chancellor Carranza's house, our former chancellor, because they were so unhappy about the thought of having to return to the classroom. I didn't see the FBI getting involved to stop the teachers from protesting outside of somebody's house. I would never do that. I would never go to somebody's house. I think it's bad form. I think it's ugly. I think it turns up the temperature when what you're trying to do is have conversation. But freedom of speech means freedom of speech. You can yell your thoughts outside of someone's home or at a school board meeting. And defending that is incredibly important.
Now, Peter Montgomery, as you noted, Attorney General Merrick Garland did write a memo in response, and in part of that memo, it said that this task force that the Justice Department would create would be composed of FBI and Justice Department representatives to, quote, determine how federal enforcement tools can be used to prosecute these crimes. And Maud Maron says that the response from the DOJ, specifically from Attorney General Merrick Garland, that the FBI could get involved with cases of threats of violence at school board meetings, well, that crosses a line.
Merrick Garland needs to write a letter to make it really, really clear that state law enforcement agencies are perfectly capable and the appropriate law enforcement authority to intervene if someone did something illegal. There was no evidence of illegal behavior going on. Being rude, refusing to stop speaking when your allotted time is up, you know, banging on windows, yelling about mask mandates being akin to Nazism. You may disagree strongly with any of that, but not any of it is illegal.
So that is Maud Maron, a former school board member in New York and now an independent candidate for New York City Council. You know, Peter Montgomery, we could debate the legal and civil liberties questions here for quite some time. But I think a deeper issue is, why is it right now that so many parents in so many different localities across the country are coming quite passionately to school board meetings? I mean, it's popularly seen as sort of a grassroots uprising, is it?
Well, there are certainly parents who have had a tough year with schools, as educators have, right? COVID just threw schools into a lot of disarray, and educators had to try to figure out what was best for students and for teachers. And so that has left a lot of, I think, both parents and educators frazzled. And I think that's part of why now when we're looking at conversations about vaccines and masks, there's a lot of anger. It just sort of builds on that stress that was already there. The other piece of this, though, is not just an uprising. It is an organized effort to channel that anger, to foment anger about a so-called critical race theory into political action. And there is a whole network of right-wing political organizations that are devoted to doing that and are actively encouraging parents to report anonymously examples of what might be CRT sneaking into their schools so that right-wing media can turn those into controversies that are designed to inflame people. So there's a combination of, legitimate parental concerns about issues, and then there is a manufactured set of controversies which is part of a propaganda campaign with a political purpose.
So what are some of these conservative organizations that you say are organizing and funding and fomenting this?
Well, the Heritage Foundation, one of the large influential think tanks on the political right in the U.S. and its action arm have ebooks and toolkits on critical race theory. They're encouraging people to report, examples of critical race theory, and they and other organizations, you know, they put out information like, if you see these words, that's critical race theory sneaking into school. And they're words like diversity and equity and inclusion. And so they're creating this boogeyman out there that they can then use to stoke controversy. There's a group, the Leadership Institute, a longtime conservative organization, is training people to run for school boards and take over school boards. The Family Research Council is raising money to for what it says is to train candidates to take over school boards. And they've they say that in June they had a boot camp that trained 1,200 parents to do that. So there's a set of and this goes across the what we might think of as the right wing, from people like Heritage Foundation and the Leadership Institute to newer organizations like Turning Point USA, which is a right-wing youth organizing group, part of the Koch Brothers Network, like Freedom Works, religious right groups like the Family Research Council.
Yeah.
They have all jumped on this bandwagon because they see it as an issue that they can exploit to try to make political gains this year and in 2022 and 2024.
Ah, so moving towards elections then. But of course, you know, one person's view of a potential quote-unquote takeover of school boards, according to others, would be just democracy in action. So Peter Montgomery, stand by here for a second, because you mentioned Heritage, and joining us now from Washington is Noah Weinrich. He's a spokesman for Heritage Action for America. It's a conservative policy advocacy organization founded back in 2010. It is the sister organization to the Heritage Foundation. Noah Weinrich, welcome to you.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for having me.
So how is it that, how would you describe Heritage Action for America's interests and activities regarding school boards and across the United States?
Absolutely. So Heritage Action for much of this year has been active on critical race theory. We are an established grassroots national conservative organization. We have tens of thousands of dedicated activists called Sentinels across the country, nearly 2 million grassroots activists total. We are an 11-year-old organization. Critical race theory is a newish fight for us. But we have been, as the other guest has pointed out, we have toolkits, we have ebooks. We are primarily educating our activists and educating parents who may not be conservatives or may not be in the conservative movement about critical race theory, how it's gotten into their schools, how they can find it. We are helping parents file FOIA requests to find out how school boards and state boards of education are determining their curriculum. We are helping them to report instances of critical race theory, helping to shine a spotlight on this.
But let me ask you, what's the overall goal then? I mean, I'm looking at the Save Our Schools website that Heritage Action for America has. And as you just said, Noah Weinrich, it's a place where parents can, quote unquote, report incidents of critical race theories in their schools. To what end? Why?
Sure. So yeah. While some of the other organizations have focused on school board elections, we are focused on training and activism. So we have resources where parents can, you know, lobby their state legislatures, lobby their school boards, lobby their federal legislators to work to reject CRT, which we believe is really a racist ideology at its core that may, in fact, violate civil rights laws. We are empowering them with knowledge to go to their school board. We've realized that American parents across the board, once they understand what critical race theory is, they reject it just across the board.
So you've described several million grassroots activists that Heritage Action for America is assisting, this toolkit that you talked about, the ebook, the website. How much money is Heritage Action for America spending on these grassroots efforts?
I don't have a dollar figure for you, but the important thing to understand about this is that it is a grassroots-driven movement. I would love to take credit for this movement, but I can't. This is American parents. You know, you look at this spring, Loudoun County. That was where this really started. Parents saw what was happening in their schools. Over the last year or two, they actually, for the first time, got to see their students' classes because they were on Zoom. They for the first time, understood what was being taught to their children. They were being taught these divisive concepts, and they didn't like it. And they stood up to their school board this spring, and that started to spread throughout the nation. And so we've come alongside those parents to help equip them with resources, because these are ordinary parents. They are not generally what you would think of as the longtime political activist.
Well, I mean, you say they saw what was happening in schools, but there are conservative activists out there, Christopher Rufo, who said that the goal is to have the public read something crazy in the newspaper and immediately think critical race theory. So they've essentially, quote, decodified the term and will recodify it to annex the entire range of cultural constructions that are unpopular with Americans. So are they actually seeing critical race theory at work, or is it something else that conservative activists from Washington would like parents to see?
I mean, they absolutely are. And, you know, look no further than the teachers' unions. The National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers have endorsed critical race theory by name, quote, critical race theory. The National Education Association started a new program this year to teach their teachers and administrators critical race theory and equip them to teach that in the classroom. So there's this sort of myth from the left that critical race theory as such is not being taught. But the teachers' unions are really driving this. Parents are not driving this. Mm. A lot of teachers aren't driving this. The teachers' unions have come in and told teachers how to teach critical race theory, and parents are standing up.
Well, Noah Weinrich, spokesman for Heritage Action for America, joining us from Washington. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Montgomery with Right Wing Watch. Stand by for a second. We have to take a quick break. We are talking about what's going on with American school boards. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow we're going to ask a simple question. Why don't we listen? Why don't people listen to each other? Because we've all been there. Work, family dinners, fights with people you care about, even just shouting back at the TV. So have you been in conversations where it felt like people weren't listening to each other? Were you saying something and not being heard or misunderstood? And maybe you were the one not listening until you finally did. So what changed when you started listening? We want to hear those stories. 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683, about a show regarding listening tomorrow on Point. And today, funnily enough, today we're talking about a place where there's not a lot of listening going on right now, and that is in school boards across America. They're some of the most contentious political spaces in the country right now, and we're trying to understand why. And so here's Gina Clayton Tarvin, a trustee on the board at Ocean View School District in Huntington Beach, California. She called us to share about the years of threats she's faced since being elected to the board in 2012.
Death threats, bomb threats, you name it, we have been subjected to it due to radical right-wing factions, including the Proud Boys unit of Orange County, RAM, or the Rise Against movement, and other local fascist groups. I've had to get a restraining order against one person who's threatening me, and they come in droves.
In fact, on Tuesday night, the Ocean View School Board held a meeting that played out the way so many meetings have across the country.
There was a whole group of folks outside who demanded to enter the boardroom without their masks on, which is a violation of California Department of Public Health rules and our own local board rules. And we had to call the Huntington Beach Police Department to break up the melee. Folks are getting out of control. It's unacceptable. There were children in the boardroom last night, kindergartners, believe it or not, were doing a performance for us. And these people tried to disrupt and break into the boardroom, and they were screaming and yelling. And I tell you, it was absolutely dishonorable and disruptive and disgraceful behavior.
That's Gina Clayton Tarvin, a trustee on the board at Ocean View School District in Huntington Beach, California. Peter Montgomery with Right Wing Watch. Again, you heard Noah Weinrich from Heritage Action for America just before the break there saying, insisting that they are simply supporting issues and parents who are already passionate about education. I just wanted to hear your response to what he said.
I think if you look at the range of right-wing political groups that have jumped on the bandwagon this year to try to create controversies around so-called critical race theory in schools, to use right-wing media to inflame those anecdotes, and then to use all that to turn out angry people, is something far more than just the expression of concern from parents. You know, and I think it is fundamentally dishonest to pretend that there is no systemic racism in this country when you look at the racial disparities and the policies that contributed to them. And I think it's fundamentally dishonest to smear educators who are just trying to address those inequities or respond to racist incidents in their communities or figure out how to keep students safe as being part of some kind of nefarious Marxist movement that is out to replace the U.S. government with communist tyranny. And that is literally the kind of language that is being used on the right to talk about these controversies in schools.
Well, I want to just hear a little bit more from you in more detail, if we can, about it sounds like you're describing almost a political engine at work here. Right? Because according to you and in your research, Peter, groups like Heritage Action for America and the others that you named earlier are spending money to educate or inflame parents on issues they probably already do care about, but then support them as and propel them into places like school board meetings or membership onto school boards. And then what? To create kind of public disturbances so that those things can then be captured on what media and social media and then further foment or inflame or mobilize then what? Voters for the next election?
Absolutely, voters for the next election. And you're right, mentioning social media is one important thing that I didn't mention earlier when we talked about why this time is different. Now, anybody can go and make an angry speech at the school board and then put it on and become a star among their friends and among maybe other right-wing activists. And I want to also point out that school board takeover was not just my term. That's the term that the Leadership Institute has talked about what they're training people for. And FreedomWorks talked about training people to take back school boards one seat at a time. And together they've trained thousands of people this year to do that. So it's clearly a political movement. And you know, it's taking over the school boards is an end in itself, and trying to control what's taught in schools is one goal. But it is also clearly a springboard to getting people to then run for higher office or getting people more politically engaged in upcoming elections.
Okay, so we have an example going on right now about how the issue of schools and education is playing a bigger role than usual in a state-level election. Now, education is always part of the picture in local elections, but this particular angle is front and center in the ongoing race for governor in the state of Virginia. Now, here is Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, and he said this about parents' rights in an interview on Fox News on October 6th.
Loudoun County was ground zero as parents stood up for their children. Open our schools. Stop teaching them what to think and teach them how to think. And by the way, if there's sexually explicit materials in the library, in the curriculum, we deserve to know. And my opponent, Terry McAuliffe, stood up last week and he said the truth, that he believes, everybody saw it, that he believes parents have no right in their children's education. Well, I say that's not right. That is not right. Parents absolutely have primacy in their children's education. And oh, by the way, Virginia law says so.
That's Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate for governor in Virginia on Fox News on October 6th. Well, joining us now from Richmond, Virginia, is Laura Vozella, Virginia politics reporter for The Washington Post. Laura Vozella, welcome to On Point.
Hi.
So describe to us how you're seeing the sort of cultural aspect of schools and school boards playing out in the governor's race there.
Well, it's really interesting. As you know from your previous guest, Loudoun has been an epicenter of this. Glenn Youngkin, as a Republican running in a state where Republicans have not won statewide in a long time, has tried to walk a fine line on a lot of issues. And his challenge is to keep the front base excited without alienating the suburban moderates who he needs as well, if he's going to be able to pull off a win against Terry McAuliffe. And he's, after sort of winking at some of the claims about election fraud and all that, he initially, after winning the nomination, said he would shift to kitchen table issues, including education. But it has been these culture wars in education that he's honed in on. But he's very careful about using language that is at least intended to not alienate more moderate suburbanites. So he is railing against CRT, but he will use language, for instance, he'll quote Martin Luther King Jr. and say, oh, you know, aren't we all supposed to be basically colorblind? And so, and isn't it wrong to teach white children that they are oppressors and teach black children that the system is going to hold them down? So he's very cautious about how he uses this language, but he is pushing this idea that CRT is being taught in the schools when in fact every school says it's not in the classrooms, although there obviously is some equity work going on with teacher training. So
Well, Laura, if I could just jump in here for a second, I'm interested to hear if and how the sort of conservative network that Peter Montgomery was describing is showing up in the Virginia governor's race, because I think I've seen that Steve Bannon is even lurking at some of these the political events.
He popped up last night at a political event that was on behalf of the ticket. Youngkin not appear, but one of his teammates was supposed to, and then she actually bowed out early. And even Donald Trump then called into the event, and I think there was they keep them at arm's length, but still use them to excite the base. So. There are some people who, you know, Loudoun parents, because of the proximity to D.C., who are, plugged in political activists who have sort of led the charge against CRT. That doesn't mean they're not always also parents, but that's part of the landscape here in Loudoun in the shadow of D.C.
Well, Laura Vozella, I wish I could ask you a couple more questions, but the quality of your line is degrading pretty fast here, so I'm going to let you go. It's okay, no problem. Laura Vozella is the Virginia politics reporter for The Washington Post, and she spoke to us from Richmond. Laura, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Peter Montgomery, we've got about 5 minutes here left to sort of really understand what are the takeaways from this conversation? Because clearly, there is a significant uptick in contentiousness at school board meetings across the country. Protests inside and outside, passionate parents speaking, a movement to support and recruit people to run for school board. But is this not just the latest example at how good the conservative movement has been and continues to be at activating sort of nationwide local politics and getting involved in that. And if progressives are concerned about that, since I can't quite hear anything illegal happening going on, if progressives are concerned about that, maybe they should just do better and try to match those efforts.
Well, Megan, I think that it's not just a question of encouraging people to be active politically. Again, that's one thing. But the sort of anger, fomenting the anger that has boiled over in some cases to harassment and threats is another thing. I think that, you know, what we're seeing is really harmful to communities. When I heard you playing that tape of some of the anger coming out at meetings, I thought about some of the Tea Party meetings that we heard where people were fueled to anger with lies about what the Affordable Care Act would do and how it was going to destroy Medicare. And so you'd like all this anger was created around really around lies, but it worked for the right. If your only value is winning the next election, right? It helped people turn out to the vote and win. And I think some of that is what we're seeing here. You can often mobilize people if you make them fearful and angry, and you say that their children are being threatened by teachers in public schools who have evil intent. You know, some of the groups that are involved in this anti-CRT campaign have long records of trying to sow distrust in public education. And that plays into this as well.
You know what needs to also play into this that we haven't just explicitly said, and we should, is that we are living in a post-January 6th world. And I say that because even as I note that being passionate and showing up in a rally is, there's no problem with that, we're now living in a world where lies and misinformation and fomenting anger and fear nationwide led to a point where Congress got invaded by insurrectionists in an attempt to overthrow government. So is it a step too far to say that is lurking, that needs to lurk in the backs of everyone's minds when they see the temperature rising locally at their district school board meetings?
I think that's definitely on people's minds, and it should be. You know, when we think of, we also had threats against the governor of Michigan, you know, from local militia groups who were being mobilized. So I think January 6th does make people more concerned about the impact of inciting people to anger and inciting people to mob action, if you will, based on lies that are meant to stir them up to anger. And I think that's damaging. When you see some of these school board meetings, I think it's harmful to kids to see concerns about public health or concerns about how we teach about racism being dismissed as something sinister and evil. And it's certainly harmful to communities who are having, you know, really intense divisions created over these issues.
And so then as a final thought, we've just got about a minute to go here. If in communities where there is rising concern, even if it's not over ideology, but just how dangerous some of these school board meetings might feel, what would you advise?
That's a good question. I think, school boards, you know, making it clear that people do have the right to speak, that they're not trying to silence people, you know, neither is the federal government trying to silence people. They are concerned about criminal acts. They're concerned about some of this hostility leading to violence. And I think that parents and parents groups and people that are organizing parents should also be concerned about the level of anger and fear that they're ramping up and maybe get their activists to engage civilly.
Well, Peter Montgomery is senior fellow at Right Wing Watch, a project of the progressive group People for the American Way. He studied the religious right movement and right-wing political groups for more than two decades. Peter Montgomery, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.